Use, so there's some sort of disconnect between businesses that have a supply, families that are looking for those businesses and not finding them. So we have three recommendations here. We recommend surveying local families to find more about the nature of their needs so we can help childcare businesses rise to them. We suggest working to help get the word out that there are free navigation services. There's information online. We actually have real life people in our office that would love to help families be good consumers of childcare and find that good match. The city already has that information on their website, which is great. And another opportunity would be to invest in childcare business marketing. So some childcare business micro grants could be an option. The second finding is there's this perception that families are choosing non-licensed care due to the costs. So again, survey families, let's find out what the real challenges are for them. Another opportunity would be to invest in childcare quality. So our feeling is that wherever children are, let's bring quality to them. And so if families are making choices because of affordability issues or whatever weighs on a family, to make sure that those programs are supported and well-resourced, because if the whole point is they're not being paid very well, then they probably aren't as well-resourced. And I don't know, and it makes it harder for them to be that stable person that your workforce needs. In order to show up at work, a family needs to know their child is well cared for and is reliable. Explore options for subsidized childcare. I know there's some exciting opportunities coming this summer for school-age children in the community, but there are a lot of different models for assisting to subsidize childcare, including in the business spaces. There are businesses that are subsidizing childcare. There might be some interested in your community as well. Promote family-friendly practices. First Five San Luis Obispo has invested in family-friendly practices initiative. They fund Atascadero Chamber of Commerce to work countywide. They have toolkits to talk to employers about flexible spending, flexible schedules, all the things that take pressures off of our local childcare system. The next finding is that childcare business expansion is limited by childcare workforce and tight budgets. I could have spent another 30 minutes talking about this, but I'll just let you know that our childcare professionals are undercompensated and often disregarded. So we're recommending any sort of advocacy you can do. There are worthy wage campaigns that come up here and there that we've talked about, a day without childcare. There's a lot of different things that could be done, but even just the city recognition of the important role our early care and education professionals play could go a long way. And then finally, our fourth finding is that childcare business expansion appears to be limited by physical space. So certainly grants for startup, expansion, repair, renovation, all of these things could make a difference. We recommend reviewing existing policies and practices to see if there are any barriers in the permitting process or the permitting fees. And there's some exciting work that's happening out of Uplift Central Coast Childcare Coalition, and Maggie's here, I'm sure she'll tell you a little bit about it, but they're looking at opportunities to consider land use practices and what can be done. Certainly developer incentives and easements might make a difference as you have building projects come up. Incentivizing landlords to welcome childcare businesses. They can't tell somebody that they can't operate, but they certainly can reduce the number of children those programs can serve, and they can make it, you know, less hospitable. So anything you could do to make it celebrate the fact that landlords are supporting childcare, we're wanting childcare to be in families' local community. And then finally, always contribute to advocacy. There was a recent opportunity to advocate with the state fire marshal. So as things like that come up, we'd love to be able to call upon the city and let them know this is an opportunity to weigh in on change. Thank you for so much of your time. I don't know what happens next if you have questions, but I do know that there's the full report on the city website, and we love to talk about this, and so I would welcome conversation at any time.
Thank you for your presentation. Do we have council questions for Shauna and Mary Ellen?
We can start.
Councilmember Bausch.
So, thank you for the presentation. I touched on a lot of points that confirmed what had talked to different business owners, had bumped into a local CPA, confirmed a lot what you said regarding his clients. His child daycare clients had lots of opportunities and openings, but people couldn't afford to send their kids to daycare, so they were, the return just wasn't there. It cost too much to send their kids, so they just missed out on going to work. The other point that I wish we had more time to spend on was the impact that TK has on childcare. We thought that that might have opened up more opportunities to provide an alternative for childcare providers. In fact, the opposite has happened. It seems to have exacerbated a worsening condition, and it's taken the profit motive out. And so that's kind of a sad thing. I think it's good for the child to go to TK. Do you see any of that turning around down the road? I mean, is it? I'm not sure that the state of California can afford to expand TK, but if that were to happen, that help provide more access. And they're only going to do it in the morning, in the afternoon. The problem is really late in the afternoon and overnight and over the weekend. Nobody seems to have a solution to that.
Right. No, we're watching other states that are doing beautiful work. Certainly, there are a number of different ways California could have approached it, and this way has made it really hard for childcare businesses to stay in business. And so that kind of diminishes your supply in a way. Transportation is a big issue, and then the learning experiences of the children who are being transported with a program, picking up children at all these different times, those have all been challenges. But I know there are people who are working on it, and we're really hopeful that they'll find a solution that makes more sense for families. I know there's the extended learning opportunities for families. That's made a difference in terms of extending the day from transitional kindergarten to a little bit longer so families can work. But it is tricky. I think California decided, let's just try it, and then we'll refine it as we go. But our businesses are struggling.
Is there anything that you know of that's happening through the County Office of Education that might allow businesses to and cities to just have a think tank of some kind and get together? We don't want to lose TK. We want more parents to enroll their children in TK. But we sat down, ignore this problem. It's not going to get worse or get any better. It's just going to get worse. We reached out.
Yes, I'm certain that the County Office of Education would be very interested in participating in those types of conversations. What's fortunate is the Child Care Planning Council is housed there, and so that is a team that has been doing a lot of work called Quality Counts, because the vision that we had was that we would build quality in these private businesses and the schools could contract with them so that more children could access the benefit of those early learning opportunities. So I definitely think they'd be interested in having some innovative thought around what we can do to kind of keep the businesses we have, infuse them with more learning opportunities, and at the same time make sure that children get connected with the school community they're going to be moving into.
It's a multi-part problem. It's a multifaceted solution.
Thank you for your efforts. You have Paso Robles Joint Unified School, and they have done a lot of innovative work, and I know that they're at the table and have a relationship with our Child Care Planning Council chair.
Right. Thank you.
Fred, Steve, good. Councilmember Beal.
Thank you so much. I've been waiting. I've been very excited to have this on the agenda. I've been waiting a long time for it. So we appreciate your effort and all the work that you're doing. It's so important to be having these conversations to kind of come up with the different sticking points. And just to educate the community, what could a typical cost for a full-time childcare enrollment be for a non-subsidized person?
Yes. So we collect average rates that these childcare businesses are charging. And so for a child under the age of two, it's $1,286 a month. This is at a point in time, so this was last week. For children 2 to 5 years of age, it's $1,082 a month. And then for school-age children, well, six and older, is $1,037 a month. And so that's the average. We could also help you see the upper and lower thresholds, because it gets a little money when you have programs that are free or also subsidized.
And so if there's a couple of children, this is going to be at least a couple of $1,000. It's really equivalent to the cost of housing.
Yes.
For these working families.
Yes. And the amazing thing, I apologize for interrupting, but the amazing thing is that as costly as it is for families, it is very hard to make this a business that sustains itself.
Actually, I'd like you to go into that a little bit more. How can something be so costly and yet the people be so underpaid? What's going on with this industry?
So if the person is on the receiving end of, you know, having maybe five children, so that's $5,000 a month, and they're working 50 hours a week, that's hard. that's not enough to bring in early learning opportunities, to be able to transport children, to do all the things families are expecting them to do, and certainly not enough to employ an assistant, which is what surfaced in that conversation. We see the challenges even bigger in the child care centers. So the early care, the workers in those spaces are making a little bit more than minimum wage, and I'd be happy to connect you with a study that was just done on San Luis Obispo County and the state as a whole by University of Berkeley. They collected a lot of rich information on how much or how little lead teachers and assistant teachers are making for the care of their of children. And those center-based programs usually, they're not always employing people with full-time hours. So you're talking about part-time hours for some making $18 an hour. It's really hard. And there's metrics on how many of our early care and education professionals have to rely on public assistance themselves. So they're on food stamps, Medicaid, everything like that.
Great. And can you talk a little bit, and it might be Maggie, hi Maggie, a little bit where sort of the city, you know, there are lots of different ways the city could come in, but the things that I've been hearing in the different groups kind of relate to community development around having a very clear and consistent rules in terms of business permits and then building permits and things like that. Could you speak a little bit to that?
Yes. So Maggie will tell you a little bit about the details of the work, but there is an opportunity for counties across a six-county region to be involved in some land use work, so planners can share what's happening and we'll get some best practice information and consider whether or not there's some small changes that can make a difference, even just making sure that it's really clear how to receive a permit in the city is helpful. We talk about a license for childcare, and you all talk about a business license, and those are actually two different things, and it's very confusing for somebody who's pursuing this to figure out. So the idea is that there will be some information and support for your planners, and then there will be a team of navigators to assist prospective childcare business owner operators to move through the process and be successful. That said, I haven't heard that that community of Paso Robles is really hard to get a permit for. So it's something I haven't heard those complaints. So I feel hopeful that you're already doing a lot of the right things, and there's some small tweaks like making that information more accessible or celebrating that information that can be done to encourage businesses to open here. But again, we're encouraging businesses to open in a space where businesses are already struggling. And so it's a challenging thing to figure out.
And just the final comment. So I was interacting with a bunch of child care providers, and it was very eye-opening to me. It was almost like there was a cash flow issue. They had more slots to take in more kids, but they didn't have the cash to hire on the staff. So once they got kind of that initial bridge loan to hire on the staff, then they could take on the kids, and then it was sustainable. But then the next sort of bottleneck for them was transportation. They were limited by the number of seat belts that they had in the car because transportation in Paso Robles for students is very limited. So once they got a bridge loan to expand their transportation capacity, everything just sort of opened other things up. And I appreciate that we're looking at this. I appreciate that we have it in our economic development plan. I appreciate that it's in the goals as we move forward. And I actually think the city of Paso can be a leader in this to help provide information to both providers and clients to help make connections, and I look forward to working with you. Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay, this was a presentation. Anybody would like to maybe make a comment? Maybe you guys can stand by for a second. Welcome.
Hi, everyone. My name is Maggie Payne. I am providing comment as the coordinator of the Uplift Childcare Coalition, based at First 5 San Luis Obispo County. We're funded through Uplift Central Coast as a part of the California Jobs First Initiative, and we're a regional cross-sector project reinforcing childcare as an integral component of economic mobility. So First 5 and the Coalition would like to express support for CCRC CAPSLO's recommendations based on the findings of this study. Learning the capacity exists and that spaces are available, and yet families are still facing extensive challenges. Securing quality and affordable care is a really unfortunate reality. You've all addressed a lot of the things I'm going to say, so it might be a bit redundant, but a lot of it's due to the age of the children. As we've talked about, TK has taken a lot of the four-year-olds out of our child care programs. It's not that easy to shift downward and start serving younger children in order to alleviate that gap. That costs a lot of money, and it costs sometimes a relicensing, and different factors contribute to the high cost of childcare and the inability to be as flexible as I think a lot of the businesses would like to be. And so all of this impacts our local employers, our local small businesses, and the vitality of our economy, because parents need to be able to work to either retain employment or even enter the workforce. And so we at First 5 and at the Uplift Childcare Coalition would like to offer ourselves as thought partners and collaborators as you explore options to respond to all of these findings and recommendations. And so finding four actually identifies a really specific need, which is the childcare programs that are full and hoping to expand but face barriers to doing so. So the program that we've been talking about and the initiative that's coming up is called the Child Care Facilities Action Network. It's a coordinated Bold Knight County effort working to make it easier to build and expand child care facilities through two tracks. So one is the child care specialist. So having local advocates become familiar with childcare land use and supporting their different communities in helping potential business owners move through that process. And then number two is really where the city of Paso Robles can come in. We'll be working with city and county planning departments to update local land use policies, remove zoning barriers, improve permitting pathways, and enable co-location of childcare with housing and with other community uses. And so this work begins with the engagement of the cities and the counties, moving into a regional survey, so we'd be able to come in and look at the existing policies and procedures, and then culminates in a learning session for all of the planners on best practices specific to the city or municipality. So it's an excellent opportunity to address the findings, and I am happy to provide more information and to be along the ride with you all if you're interested in participating. The city of Paso, as you said, Chris, have been a very very respected leader in all of this work because of the fact that childcare has been so elevated here and included in economic development. So we really hope that you'll continue to be a leader, and especially across the whole Central Coast. So really quickly, beyond my professional role, I speak as a working parent and a resident of Paso Robles, so I just really appreciate all of you for prioritizing this. Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Thank you, Shannon and Mariana, for your CAPSLO resource help and all the work you're doing to working families out there for childcare services in today's workforce. Thank you. That concludes. Well done. Thank you. That concludes presentations for this meeting, and we'll move on to general public comments. This is the time that the public may address the council on items within our purview but not scheduled on tonight's agenda. Council or staff may briefly respond to statements or questions posed by the public. Please fill out a speaker card and give it to our city clerk prior to speaking. You'll have 3 minutes to speak. Those people wishing to speak on any scheduled item on tonight's agenda will be given that opportunity at the time that item is being considered. So first up, Dale, looks like you're there.
Yeah, Dale Gustin, as the professional politician, say, I rise to bring a point of order. You know, when the agenda was published, it said that this meeting was going to be conducted at 1000 Spring Street. Now, I was puzzled. I contacted Chris Bausch, and he said, well, not to his knowledge, it was going to be out here at Centennial. Well, I said, well, why does the agenda say it's over on Spring Street? He says he didn't know. And so I found out it was changed, but not 72 hours before it was to be conducted. Now, I contacted Gary Lear because he's more up on the Brown Act than me, and he concurred with me. You have to take all the action items and schedule them to another meeting that is duly noticed for time, place, and location. And that is a prerequisite to complying with the Brown Act. So I respectfully request that all action items be continued to a date, time, and place certain, and given 72 hours notice of that meeting. Also, I'm going to raise another issue, but not now. The recent Supreme Court decision may have violated our district maps, and I'm still studying that for city council persons. Of course, the mayor is elected at large, so there's no problem for the mayor.
Okay, thank you. Welcome.
Good evening, Mayor and City Council members. My name is Brandy Valencia, and I was raised on the north side of town in the Oak Park community. I understand many of the challenges families face. Today, I work as a senior community service coordinator for the Paso Robles Housing Authority, where I continue to work closely with many of the same families and community I grew up alongside. As you begin discussing goals and priorities for the city of Paso Robles, I would like to encourage you to keep our youth and children at the center of those conversations. As a mother, I'm not always able to attend meetings as often as I would like, but my family truly values the opportunities our city already provides. Over the years, my children have participated in summer swim lessons, Paso Robles youth baseball, visits to our library. This year, we've been taking advantage of the bookmobile, and we also do AYSO soccer, just to name a few. Keeping children involved in positive hands-on activities is incredibly important as a parent. We know that time and effort invested in our children is always worth it. I would also like to bring attention to the old Georgia Brown site on 36th Street. The property has been sitting empty, and after speaking with many parents in the area, the north side of Paso Robles would greatly benefit from a larger community park space. Many families would love to see a park that includes a soccer field with lighting, basketball courts, clean and safe restrooms, and a more modern play structure for children. While Uptown Park is appreciated and well-used, having a larger and more accessible park on the north side would make a meaningful difference for many families. Not every parent is able to get across town, especially working families who may rely on older, responsible youth to walk younger children to nearby activities. A park within walking distance will create more opportunities for children to stay active, safe, and connected to their community. In addition, I believe there's more room to continue expanding youth programs and classes in our community. My children recently participated in the culinary classes through Youth Arts, and those classes quickly became the highlight of their week. We were actually waitlisted twice before finally getting the opportunity to join, which shows there's a strong need and interest for more youth programs and space. I hope the city will continue investing in spaces and opportunities that support our children, youth, and families for generations to come. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi, I am Abby Lopez, and this is one of your younger constituents, Soraya Lopez, my daughter. We are here to, first of all, thank the city and your staff for all of the incredible parks and recreation services that you guys provide for us, the library as well. And I'm going to start with the swim program that Parks and Recs provides. You know, I know it's a huge benefit to our community, but it's always a tough wait list. Araya here, actually, since it's foster care month, she came to me in my life through foster care. And one of the reasons that she came into my, you know, supervision was because she had a near drowning incident and she had to be resuscitated. So Water safety is incredibly important. It just has taken us 3 years now. She's been with me since she was five, and it's only this year that we were able to get space availability to take her and enroll her in two different level one courses that are being provided at the municipal pool. There's just a huge demand for that, and it's a great service, especially as we live in California. We're next to beaches to have these opportunities for kids. Again, it's an incredible service. She's really excited to go and take these lessons, but I just wish that there was more spaces available for kids. Another thing that we really enjoyed, you know, again, as a single parent to a child, we're always looking for opportunities that are a little bit more affordable. One thing that we did find, and I want to give you guys kudos for this, is library a week during spring break. We attended every single library activity. Araya here got to meet two different authors. She got to go to the pool to do a swim activity, as well as a reading of a book. This kid loves the library, and I think she might be a little bit shy today, but she has plenty of things that she would talk to you guys one-on-one about how much she enjoys library services. So again, I know we have lots of different priorities in this community, but keeping in mind, just as the last person that spoke, keep our kids in mind and continue to support in whatever ways you guys can those parks and recreation services and those library services. And it looks like Araya does want to say something.
I like books.
All right. Well done.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your service, too. Mike, welcome.
Mr. Mayor, council members, and staff, my name is Mike Cusson, 411 14th Street, and I'm here tonight with one of my colleagues for preparing taxes, Kevin DeRocca. And we would, I'm a counselor with AAR Tax Aid, as is Kevin, and we at the Passport Wells Veterans Building and also at the Oak Park Community Center. We're part of the IRS VITA program, of which AARP is one of the largest sponsors. VITA stands for Volunteers in Tax Assistance. I'm pleased to come before you tonight because we've had another successful season doing taxes. It's really been good. In Slo County, our group has 10 sites from Napomo to Paso, and we've prepared over 3,500 returns, all of them for free. Here in Paso, we prepared 1,100 returns, the second time we've broken 1,000 in the over half a century that we've been doing taxes here. I've been doing it for 15 years, and my predecessors have stood here at this lectern before me and thanked you for going way back. And when you add in Atascadero, our sister site down at St. William's Parish over on Traffic Way, we did 400 more tax returns, 1,500 tax returns for our North of the Grade communities. We sort of have this attitude that we're North of the Grade and the other eight sites, and so they're all my friends, but we have a little competition. Your constituents received over $1.1 million in refunds, and another almost $400,000 in Atascadero. That's $1.5 million of refunds, of federal refunds returned to the community, not to mention the California refunds that may have come back to them. This is a little bit over $400,000 over last year, and the reason is the tax law changed, and most of our clients, about 75% of our clients are over 65 years old, and so they got the benefit of the increased standard deduction of $6,000. So that really had an effect. We do this with 26 tax preparers, such as myself and Kevin, a few of which are with us tonight. Well, not a few, just one of us. We have about 12 greeters, people who like to sit and interview people when they come in the front door. We have two translators that are fluent in Spanish and Mixteca. So we work at the community center down in the north end of town, and so we have those translators that really help us. We've got 9 telephone schedulers throughout the county. And these volunteers, as well as our clients, are your constituents and are grateful for the opportunity to serve in this program and be served by it. And we could have not have done this without the city's support. That's why I'm here tonight. Every year I want to thank you guys, and without your support we couldn't have done it. You've allowed us to be open 3 days a week and be the only site in San Luis Obispo County to be open on Saturdays, which makes a difference for people who work during the week, and so we're open on Saturdays. In particular, I want to thank Linda Plesha, who's here tonight, Recreational Services Manager, for coordinating the use of the Veterans Building, and she's done this with us for many years. I'll be quick.
You can go ahead and summarize if you'd like, Mike.
Okay.
Go ahead.
And also, at the Veterans Building, I want to thank the American Legion and the Board of Directors there, at the Senior Center, Mickey Wright and Elaine Ernst, We also want to thank KPRL for putting us on the air so we can promote the program. Our expansion last year, this is one thing I do want to hit, our expansion last year to serve the Spanish-speaking community continued to be successful. Our counselors worked four Sundays. In addition to their Saturdays, they worked four Sundays, prepared 70 returns, and applied for individual tax identification numbers. The clients are farm workers who work in the vineyards and the wineries and contribute to our Social Security and disability funds. Because of yours and the housing authority's support, they were able to file their returns easily, get the refunds they were entitled to, and establish tax compliance. Thanks again to you for supporting AARP Tax Aid. It's a program that supports the entire community and benefits the entire community. If your constituents are interested in joining us, please give Mickey or Elaine a call at the Senior Center. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mike.
Again.
Appreciate the service you're doing.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Hi. Oh, Linda George, 3126 Spring Street. How about that Frida growing 2 feet? David is now our public works director. Oh, you guys ain't getting that joke. Anyways, I really wasn't planning to come to say anything tonight, but I just wanted to reiterate about the 101 and North Spring Street entrance. I'm getting more concerned because somebody came barreling down at 40 miles per hour. We have that food truck right there. I don't know if the city can ask them to move farther behind, because when this person came down 40, there were kids that were getting ready to cross the street. I agree. I was happy to see people from my area, my neighborhood, coming here asking for more services. It goes back into the skate park. That is not accessible to our neighborhood, 32nd and Spring. We have the Uptown Park, but that one is, you know, what they're asking sounds very awesome. Anyways, people say I'm harsh, but I have to say this, that I've been raised by a father who finds sympathy, not empathy, sympathy between SHIT and syphilis in the dictionary. I emailed this comment. It didn't make it in the agenda today. I don't like to say these things publicly in the meeting, but because it didn't get in the agenda again, I'm going to do it this way. I want to address the travel accommodations being billed to Paso Robles taxpayers by outside counsel. According to the invoices provided to the public, Elizabeth Hall billed the city for hotel lodging, rental cars, parking, and fuel expenses connected to council meetings only. One hotel stay alone was over $350. On top of rental car parking and fuel. If these accommodations continue throughout the year, taxpayers could easily be paying up to $20,000 annually just in travel accommodations. That's not even when legal fees are counted. We have a fair question. Why does Ms. Hall require overnight lodging while Thomas Rice appears able to make the same trips without billing taxpayers for hotel stays? If one attorney can drive back without accommodations, why can't the other? If Thomas lives closer, then he is a fine replacement for Ms. Hall. At the minimum, this city should require government hotel rates before approving any lodging expenses. Even high-end hotels routinely offer government rates when requested. I'm asking the council to adopt stricter policies for overnight stays. Now, especially when you say you don't have enough money for Main Street, Chamber, and Travel Paso. Last year, we picked apart Mr. Strong's travel expenses. And if I remember last correctly, he doesn't even get a hotel room anymore. And he's actually someone who probably needs it more. If it was in the agenda, I wouldn't have had to read it tonight.
Thank you. Sharon?
Good evening. My name is Sharon Roden. I'm speaking as a private citizen. How many of you know where and where Decoration Day, or as we know it, Memorial Day, started? You know?
Leo would, yeah.
Well, thus begin the lecture here. During the Civil War, there was a little town called Columbus, Mississippi, and it was a hospital town. And so they had a cemetery there called Friendship Cemetery. Usually I can't get through this without crying, so take it for that. So they had both Union and Confederate soldiers buried there. in that small cemetery located along the Tombigbee River. After the Civil War, the South entered into a time called Reconstruction. And Union soldiers were distributed throughout the South to establish order. One of these soldiers was stationed along the river and witnessed ladies decorating decorating graves, both Union and Confederate. He was inspired by their kindness and wrote a poem called The Blue and the Gray. Legislators were so moved by this poem that they established Decoration Day, which later became Memorial Day. The end.
Yeah, very good. Thank you for the history. Anyone else? Do we have anyone online, Melissa?
No, sir.
Okay, very good. We'll go ahead and close public comment and move on to agendas, items to be deferred. Mr. Huat, do we have any of those?
Mayor, no.
Thank you. Let's move on then to the overall view of the consent item agenda tonight. Mr. Huat, can you tell us what we're going to be looking at?
Yes, thank you, Mayor. We have 12 items on the consent calendar this evening. The first is the approval of the minutes from your May 5th meeting. Second item is the approval of minutes for your May 6th special meeting. Item 3 is the receipt of advisory body meeting minutes for the Youth Commission of April 1st. Item number 4 is the receipt of the warrant register. Since the last time we met, the city has issued $3.8 million worth of payments. I'll cover those that exceed $100,000 in more detail. The first is a payment to United Field Service Corporation. This is related to the Golden Hill Tank Recoding Project. This comes out of the water fund in the amount of $124,386. Next is a payment to Granite Construction Company. This is for the Sierra Bonita Neighborhood Road Repair Project in the amount of $1,616,155.90. Next is a payment to Mont McDonald. This is related to design work related to the Union Road Overcrossing Project in the amount of $173,834.49. Next is a payment to Paso Robles Destination, also known as Travel Paso. This is related to the February 2026 Tourism Improvement District. This is a pass-through that the city facilitates and collects on behalf of Travel Paso. And that amount was $105,489.34. The next is a payment to Pacific Gas and Electric. This is related to various electric charges for the utility department and comes out of the water fund in the amount of $103,987.85. And then finally, another payment to Pacific Gas and Electric. This is for the February 2026 utility billing for the wastewater department in the amount of $207,608.76. Jumping back over to the consent calendar, item 5 is the receipt of the treasurer's report related to city investments for March 2026. Item number 6 is the approval of a 5-year renewal agreement for the Microsoft 365 licensing. This is for all the various platforms that the city uses for word processing, spreadsheets, etc. Item number 7, I'll spend just a moment here. This is 3 items related to essentially city-owned property out at the airport. As you know, the city owns the airport, but many of the buildings out at the airport are under long-term leases with private companies. These buildings that we're talking about here are on Second Wind Way. They're actually city-owned buildings. And this suite of actions would approve the lease termination agreements with 2 tenants. And then a lease agreement with a company called Zone 5 Technologies for those 2 properties that you're also considering termination agreements for. These are essentially voluntary termination agreements. The other parties are in agreement to terminate leases. And then Zone 5 would move into these spaces. And just for the public and the council, Zone 5 Technologies is an aerospace engineering firm that specialize in unmanned aerial systems and defense-related technologies. This is directly in line with the council's vision and the city's pursuit of a spaceport license and a related tech corridor. And so this is really the fruits of some of the labor and some of the information that we've been working on and getting out there. So that's an exciting item. Item number 8 is the extension of Dale Evers Public Art Installations. Those are two installations that are on each corner of Park and 12th Streets, and this would be an extension through December of this year. Keep those up. Item number 9 is the approval of a contract change order to Sousa Construction. This is related to the two downtown parking lot rehab projects and that are substantially complete in the amount of $360,000. Item number 10 is the second reading of various ordinances and changes to the municipal code related to food trucks. Item number 11 is a approval of an oak tree removal permit to remove a tree at 1835 Vine Street and includes the required mitigation measures and replacement of certain trees. And then item 12 is also an oak tree removal permit, and this is to remove a tree at 70 Nutwood Circle. And again, there's the applicable mitigation requirements in this item as well. Mayor, that concludes the consent calendar. Happy to answer any questions.
Very good. Thank you, Chris. We'll move on then to the consent calendar items for tonight. They are considered routine and do not normally require separate discussion. However, if any member of the council or the public has a specific question or wants clarification on a consent item, we can get those answered now before the vote is taken. Secondly, any member of the council that wants a full discussion on a particular item, that will cause that item to be pulled from consent calendar and considered separately at the end of the discussion items portion of tonight's agenda. I will now ask the council if they have any questions specifically to these items 1 through 12 or wish to have a full discussion on any item. We have anybody?
No.
My left, right? Okay. I'll move on to the public. Anybody wishing to have any questions on consent tonight? Very good. Then we'll bring it back to council for direction.
I have two callers for public comment on consent.
Okay.
First is Jeanette Lopez.
I'm sorry, the name?
Jeanette Lopez.
Got Jeanette, yeah. Can you hear us? Go ahead.
Thank you. I can hear you guys perfectly. My name is Jeanette Lopez. I'm a real estate broker over at Lima at the Parkside in downtown Paso. We're talking on item 11, which is the removal of the oak tree. We've been on this project for almost 2 years, and my clients have purchased this home trying to beautify it, and we've kind of have hit some things along the way, and this is one of the items that we really need to get cleared so that way they can move on with the project and get it ready for occupancy, and this is one of the items on the tree removal. So we're hoping that we can get this addressed today so we don't keep pushing the envelope down the road on this item.
Okay. So the question is to push it. This is item 11, I believe?
Item 11, yes.
Right. And you're wanting to continue or take this off? What exactly?
No, we're hoping that we can get this settled today without it coming off the docket, maybe getting it pushed through permitting. Because this is one of our, this is one of the objects that's holding us up in regards to us proceeding with the project for the remodel of this home on Vine Street.
Okay, we'll let legal counsel weigh in on this. Elizabeth?
Sure, Mr. Mayor. I believe she's just asking that the item be heard this evening and not be continued. She'd like an answer on her oak tree removal permit. It is on the consent agenda, so
yeah, we'll be
assuming
voting
that you will be voting on all of it as a group, all 12 items.
Yeah, very good. So stand right by. You'll sure hear. You'll
thank
hear
you so much.
You bet.
She speaks in favor.
Yes, I believe so.
That's she would like it approved, yeah.
Melissa, the next one?
Next is Angelica Garcia.
Okay, Angelica, can you hear us? Go ahead.
Yes, I can, and thank you so much for your time. My name is Angelica Garcia. I'm the owner of 1835 Vine Street. And I am calling in support of item 11 as well. My husband and I, we love Paso Robles, and after looking for a property for many years, we finally found this house. And we want to make it our own. We want to be part of the community. We bought it back in 2024. And like Jeanette said, we have been running into, you know, different obstacles, and again, this is one of them. We knew the property needed a lot of care, and so we're happy and we're waiting on the sidelines to get this project started. And we would appreciate the approval of the recommendation on item 11, and look forward to becoming part of this community.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for your input then. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else?
No, sir.
Okay. Well, go ahead and then bring it back then to council for direction and or action.
Mayor Hammond.
Councilman Gregory.
I move we approve consent items, agendas number 1 through 12.
And Strong seconds.
Okay, motion by Gregory, second by Strong. Discussion? All right, we'll call for the question, Melissa.
Councilmember Gregory?
Aye.
Councilmember Strong?
Aye.
Councilmember Bausch?
Aye.
Councilmember Beal?
Aye.
Mayor Hammond?
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously.
Okay, thank you. Moving on, discussion items. First up is the approval for a preliminary monument concept for Veterans Park. Whiteland, you have that item for us tonight?
Good evening, City Council members and Mayor Hammond. I'm Wyatt Lund, Recreation Program Coordinator with our Community Services Department, and tonight it's my pleasure to present a preliminary monument concept for Veterans Park, which you see before you here, a model of it. In the spring of 2025, VFW Post 10965 Commander Leo Castillo approached City Council with interest in designing, funding, and building a veterans monument in Veterans Park in Paso Robles. Subsequently, Post Commander Castillo enlisted local blacksmith sculptor Max Randolph to create a concept design for the monument. Paso Robles currently does not have a veterans monument in any of its public parks. There you go. City staff from the Community Services Department, including myself, and Community Development Department met with Post Commander Castillo, along with Max and Casey Randolph at Veterans Park to tour the proposed site, considering accessibility, electrical access, and drainage issues, and determined that the location was suitable for a monument. The proposed site is south of Veterans Memorial Building in a space that was previously a playground but has been vacant for a couple years at this time. The proposed monument would be constructed of steel and copper, built off-site and assembled in place once ready. The concept features six 20-foot iconic swords, sabers, and cutlasses that represent the six United States military branches. The swords are anchored by an 8-foot diameter olive wreath that would be at least 13 feet overhead. The monument will feature ground level lighting, a decomposed granite center, and concrete pillars to anchor each sword handle. The total structure height would be over 20 feet. And this is a scale model that Max Randolph has created to give us a three-dimensional idea of what this would look like. And there's a photo of it. The monument will include two customizable features, engraved paver bricks for the surrounding walkway, and the inclusion of military dog tags that will be suspended from the wreath to memorialize service members. The proceeds of these additions will benefit Paso Robles VFW Post 10965 and American Legion Post 50, who have committed to performing the work of updating the monument to include these features, as well as providing ongoing maintenance to the monument. We've got a short video created by local volunteer Joe Peckham that depicts a digital rendering of the proposed monument concept imposed in Veterans Park. Please keep in mind that while this rendering shows the scale of the monument, it doesn't depict the olive wreath as the final sculpture will appear. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Peckham, for creating that. Previously, the Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee held the responsibility of endorsing or approving art installations on public property in Paso until March of this year, when the role was transferred to the newly formed Art and Culture Board, who is currently in its recruitment phase. Parks and Recreation Advisory Committee was asked to act in this role in the interim, and they unanimously endorsed the preliminary monument concept for Veterans Park during their regular meeting last month. City Council endorsement of this monument concept would allow Paso Robles VFW Post 10965 and the American Legion Post 50 to implement their fundraising plan. If endorsed, the project would enter the next phase, including determination of structural engineering requirements, electrical design, project timeline, and actual costs. Endorsement of the concept does not constitute approval of final design, construction, or installation, all of which would be subject to future City Council review and approval. At this point, it's my pleasure to introduce Post Commander Leo Castillo to speak about his vision and the inspiration that sparked this project.
Welcome, Leo.
Hello again. I'm going to read it so I don't forget anything that's important. Good evening, Mayor Hammond, council members, and city staff. Tonight, I am not only excited to speak to you about our vision for our Veterans Monument, but also to elaborate on the why this project is so important, not just for our veteran community, but for the greater Paso Robles community as well. For generations, the Paso Robles area has been home to thousands of veterans. In the 1940s, Camp Roberts housed more than 40,000 troops, and many of their families moved to the area to support them during basic training. Others stayed and after returning from service because they fell in love with this community. Many of our citizens are descendants of these heroes. Many service members are currently stationed nearby at Camp Roberts, Camp San Luis Obispo, Vandenberg, and Fort Hunter Liggett. Our community is made up of heroes, the 1% who raise their right hand to serve this great nation. Their children and grandchildren attend our schools. Their spouses work in this community, and these families have chosen Paso Robles as their home. We want to acknowledge their support, sacrifice, and commitment. Our Veterans Monument is exactly that, an acknowledgement, a statement piece, a place of reflection, and a space where the community can not only see the monument, but feel it as well. This immersive art piece will stand tall and proud with 6 sabers, cutlasses, and swords, each representing a branch of military service. At the top of the monument, the swords, sabers, and cutlasses will come together, held by an olive wreath, symboling conflict meeting peace, which is ultimately the goal. Hanging from the wreath of peace will be dog tags engraved with veterans' names, years of service, and branch of service. This monument will not only be a statement, sorry, there's a bug on my, this monument will not only be a statement wall, a stagnant wall, or a place of morbidity, but rather a place of reflection and celebration for the lives our veterans have led so that we may continue to live under the blanket of freedom we are privileged to enjoy. This immersive monument is designed to engage several of the senses, sight, sound, and touch. As the Paso Robles afternoon winds blow, the dog tags will gently cling together in a peaceful rhythm. The rustic swords, sabers, and cutlasses will weather naturally over time, giving them the monument a raw and authentic character. Its visual presence will be both powerful and inspiring. This monument is not just for us veterans, it is for our entire community and for the generations of heroes who have lived, served, and called this area home for decades. Thank you. And I will bring up the artist, Max Randolph.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hello, everyone. I'm Max Randolph. With your blessing, I'll hand sculpt this thing. A lot bigger next time, though. This is just a visual approximation so that you can kind of understand what we're throwing together, because it's such a three-dimensional object. I'm very excited for the juxtaposition of the olive wreath, and don't mean to get me going. Okay. I was deeply honored when Leo reached out to me to build this thing. You know, of a great scale, especially now that we're really turning up the heat for public art in this beautiful town that I was born and raised in. And I jumped on the opportunity as fast as I could. And the primary idea behind all of it was to give a source of structure to hang these dog tags for, so people can be memorialized and remembered for generations. And Leo and I, you know, we all threw some ideas together, and from, you know, just really fun things until Leo presided over this last Veterans Day at our cemetery. And it was right after the naval flyover. I was in the back trying to keep it together when a bunch of our service members would rise and they would stand for their song of their branch. And I'm actually having a hard time right now. It was deeply moving just to see such identity in these service members, such pride, and more so unity. I don't think there's anybody in this room that hasn't been deeply affected by a service member. And it's those stories that I'm really hoping to share and celebrate. Let's see here. Now let's talk a little bit about materials. We've had preliminary meetings with our engineer. He's very happy with the prospected structure. Things are looking really green over there until, when, you know, if we move forward, we can have some really proper conversations about that. You know, safety is very, very important. When it comes to the materials, probably 836 steel or core 10, depending on how budgeting all goes. I like the idea of moving forward with natural patina, just to show the perseverance of the material. It would age, it would change from beautiful burgundies, browns, and reds throughout the seasons and constantly be under flux. And in juxtaposition with the blades, you would actually have the olive wreath in copper that would also be shifting and changing. And I don't know about you guys, but I can't wait to stand under this structure that's going to be stretching over 20 feet with the chorus of dog tags, the sound of them chiming together and shining. I think it would be a beautiful piece and a beautiful addition to our town, the beginning of many. And I'm very excited to do this process more and more with you guys. I'm more than happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Okay, great. Start off with Councilman Bausch.
Hi, Max. Every time I see this, I get more and more excited about it. So thanks very much for your presentation tonight. And I've seen a couple different presentations just to confirm there will be lights.
Most definitely. Okay. I mean, you got to appreciate it more than just the day.
Right.
Lighting would be paramount here because you'll have, just above eye level, you have the seals of each branch. Backlit lighting is so important when it comes to evoking emotional, you know, yeah, it'll be lovely.
Very good. And will you be able to walk through the sculpture?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I can't wait for people to, you know, get dizzy doing that, you know, underneath the olive wreath and amongst the swords. It's going to be lovely. And it'll be an immersive experience because you'll be in and around this sculpture.
And if you don't mind, and maybe Leo, you can share with us. I heard a conversation about how the dog tags might come about and how we can all get involved in that.
Right. So the goal is to, once we have approval, which we are hopeful for tonight, is that we will start the campaign to market those dog tags for community members to purchase, alongside the fundraising. So it'll be simultaneous, most likely. We've had a couple conversations what that will look like with the VFW and the Legion, what the price would look like. We're still hammering that out right now. If it's gonna match a paver on the ground potentially and a dog tag, so you get a package deal, if you will. And then one of those dog tags